Blog Talk Radio.
Butler, we're dialing him right now in Chicago. Long 50 years of experience as a journalist. I think we're getting him.
Yes.
Patrick, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes,
okay.
I can. Loud and clear.
Good. Oh, we're going to make a lot of things clear in American politics. Now, we're hearing a lot about Chicago Mayor Rahm. A lot of people think he's dancing around the issues of dealing with alleged Chicago police brutality, especially involving shoot first and ask questions about young black men. What would you comment on that? Because you've been on a police beat for 50 years.
I can only say for openers that Twinkle Toes, being a former ballet student, does a very nice pirouette around a lot of these issues.
Would you?
I'm not saying he deliberately lies. That's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that he is very, very clever at dancing around some of the issues. There's no question that Chicago has a problem with this police community relations in some communities. Not all, but in some communities there is this problem. And frankly, and a lot of people are not going to like what I have to say, but I'm not running for office, so I can say it.
Not yet.
I think, I think you need to have black policemen serving in black communities, Hispanic policemen serving in Hispanic communities, and so on down the line. They have a better understanding of the culture and the situation, the people that they're dealing with.
Now, historically, when the Irish, and we're going to get into that because it's very important with this know-nothing governor, Nikki Haley's comments the other night, a lot of us, when we listened to it, found them particularly offensive. Now, when the Irish first came here, first of all, American immigration tried to keep them out. No Catholics, no Irish.
Right.
Now,
right.
What happened? They either went into the army and they shipped them out to the frontier to fight the Indians, my people, and also in the Civil War on both sides. But
right.
We said when we were in school that the early Irish immigrants here were either gravediggers, priests, or politicians, or policemen.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that was true because those were professions that they had easier access into. You got to remember that many of the Irish, not all, many of the Irish did not have the education or wherewithal to get into some of the other professions. But you did have, even in the 1850s, you did have Irish doctors and Irish lawyers and that sort of thing. Now, there was a great deal of discrimination against the Irish because of their religion, because of the fact that many of them came over here dirt poor, and frankly, their neighborhoods, as you would expect, were not prime choice neighborhoods. I'm not saying they were ghettos, but other people might say that. The fact of the matter is, these were people who came over here one step ahead of starvation. In some cases, one step ahead of the British Army, because some of them came over here not because they were starving to death, but because of the fact that they were facing things like warrants, you know, for maybe killing a British agent or something like that. And so they had the choice of either coming over here, and sometimes very quickly, or ending up making the acquaintance of the hangman or going off to Australia. Now, the Brits didn't realize that when they started sending all of these Irish to Australia, you had politically very astute people, very good organizers, all being sent to one place where they, in effect, ended up running the governments of some of the states in Australia within a generation.
No, it's interesting.
In 1848, Queen Victoria commuted the sentences of 20 Irish rebels who were about to be hanged. And some of them were sent to Australia, some of them went elsewhere. And 20 years later, she inquired as to what happened to these people. One of them was police commissioner in New South Wales, Australia. Another was head of the Supreme Court of another Australian state. Two of them were generals in the American Army. One of them was General Maher, who after the war became involved in an attempt to seize part of Canada and hold it for ransom until the Brits passed a home rule law. What happened was, the Fenians, yes.
Okay.
And what happened was, the Fenians, many of them were Union Army veterans, most of them were, and so they were still in their uniforms. And they had small shamrocks, you know, on their hats. But from 10 feet away, if you saw these guys charging at you, you'd swear they were Yanks. And so the Brits were under the impression that the Americans, feeling our muscle, were going to try to grab parts of Canada while we still had an army. Fact of the matter is, these were discharged Union Army troops, many of whom entered the Union Army specifically for the opportunity to learn the craft of making war, and they came out. Some of them came out as officers, some came out as NCOs, and they had all of these skills which they didn't have, so they were able to apply it to, in some cases, going back to Ireland to carry on the fight, and in other cases, taking part in this abortive invasion of Canada. Now, I emphasize, the United States government had absolutely nothing to do with this. The White House, when they heard that Irish troops in American uniforms were invading Canada, their concern was to try to prevent or dissuade the British government from declaring war, because there was serious consideration that the United States was behind this. And so, yeah, you give an Irishman some opportunity and you train him or her, they're going to learn those skills quickly and fit in. In fact, one of the Chicago newspapers, I think you can guess which one, in 1863, in an editorial, they were concerned about the numbers of Irish Americans who were flooding into the Union Army and the Confederate Army as well. And the editorial said, and I quote, "When Patty returns from the war, probably with some rank, he is going to insist on being treated like any other citizen of this country." And, you know, if that sounds familiar, that's exactly the same thing that some of the newspapers in the United States were worried about after World War One and after World War Two, when all of these black soldiers were returning home and they were going to make certain demands for changes. So, again, you give a guy a little authority, you give a guy a gun, he is going to learn what he needs to learn, and he is going to insist on being treated just like everyone else.
Oh, it's
so, yes, the Irish played a big role in the civil rights movement in the United States, and in fact, the Civil War. After the war, Robert E. Lee was asked by a reporter, "How is it that you, with superior officers to anything that the Union had in the beginning of the war, and how is it that you, knowing the country that you were fighting in better than the Union Army, and that you had more access to foodstuffs, fresh food, how is it that you lost the war?" And Lee looked at the reporter and said, "Lincoln had more Irishmen than I did."
But he also had some incompetent, who was an Ambrose Burnside, McClellan.
Ambrose Burnside. Oh, and of course, you mustn't forget McClellan. Now, McClellan had a resume. If you were to look at his resume, you would say, this is the man. However, he was very good at training an army. He was afraid to use it because he didn't want to get it messed up.
It sounds like Kaiser Wilhelm and his Navy.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter was, the whole purpose of having an army is to, as an officer explained to me once when I was doing a story up at Fort McCoy, he said, "For the next several days, you are going to see and you are going to learn how to break things and do grievous bodily harm." And I mean, that's what you're there for, you know.
Oh yeah, right. Well, you know, we can't have parade ground soldiers.
If you want to dance, go with the ballet or go to the Admiral Theater. If you're a girl, if you want to talk, work with the State Department. But if you want to, according to the Geneva Accord, the definition of war, the object of war is to, quote, "bring about the complete submission of the enemy by means of regulated violence."
That's
what you're there for.
Yeah.
You know.
Incidentally.
Yeah.
In 1922, on this date, Michael Collins became Prime Minister, the Premier of the Irish Free State. That didn't last too long, though. Of course, he was assassinated. But I thought it was an interesting.
Well, Collins was not. He was the chief negotiator in the treaty. But Eamon de Valera had been the provisional Prime Minister of the Irish Free State. Mm-hmm. Michael Collins was the head of and founder of the modern Irish Army. And it is said, I'm not saying it, it is said that Eamon de Valera may have had a hand in Michael Collins's assassination.
Oh, yeah, no.
I do know that I saw films you know, old scratchy silent films of Michael Collins's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big state funeral, and who was there leading the mourners but Eamon de Valera? And he goes and places a wreath at the coffin and all of that sort of thing. And all the while, there was a lot of speculation. And again, mm-hmm. I wasn't there, so how would I know? Mm-hmm. There was a lot of speculation that Eamon de Valera may have knocked Michael Collins out of the way because he was afraid that Michael Collins was going to compete against him for leadership of the Irish Republic.
Yeah, well, something happened.
Yeah.
Now, Patrick,
yeah.
Now this Republican governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley, very little is known about this woman. I was doing some research. Apparently, her parents came from India. They were Sikhs. And, of course, so you would think that she would know something about the history after the partition of India when the Hindus and the Muslims and the Sikhs, there was this bloody civil war and horrible things happened.
Right.
But now she made a comment that there's been no law against immigrants, that the government has passed, and those of us who know the history of the Chinese Exclusion Act, the treatment of Irish and all the other groups,
right.
Is she just to be viewed as a know-nothing, or has there been, I think if I were Irish, although there's claims we have in our background, but I don't admit it.
You think when you hear that idea, your thinking is, oh Lord, I am not worthy.
Well, there are things about the Irish that I would not want to be associated with. But anyway,
we all have our faults.
But the Irish have more.
Everybody
than
has.
The Irish have more than anybody else, and they brag about it.
Well, what do we brag about? You know, if you're referring to our pension for the grape and the grain, I got to tell you, not all Irish drink that much.
No,
there are some who, they're really, I mean, I say this because I was once at a party on the North Shore, which, as you know, is a very, very plush area.
Right.
And I was the guest of a lady who was a member, I won't mention the family name, a member of a very, very wealthy family. And they were in hotels and everything else. And I was her guest there. And I'm introduced to her sister. And she says, Pat Butler. And then she said, no lie, this is what she said exactly. Do you get drunk often? I didn't at first know what to say. And then later she said, tell me, Pat, is drinking a big part of your life? What I was drinking at the time was a cup of coffee.
Mm.
I think I had maybe...
Was
she of
Irish ethnicity?
No, she was of a different ethnicity, and I don't want to mention the specific ethnicity because they have a hard reputation of their own for things that they're not nearly guilty of.
I think I know who you mean.
It'd be unfair.
Okay,
I'll tell you
fine.
When we're off the air.
No, well, it's of course, no kidding aside, the Irish have the priests. Come to think of it, as we discussed earlier, that one of the conservative Catholic papers had made a claim that half of the bishops and priests, and they didn't get into the nuns because that's another problem, half of the bishops and priests are gay. And this is becoming a serious, there's a gay mafia in the Roman Catholic Church. So you want to comment on that one?
Well, not being a priest and not having spent much time in Rome, and I, you know, will admit to having known a couple priests who have become bishops. But anyway, I don't feel qualified to answer that. You know, it's easy to say there is a gay mafia in Rome or whatever, and I'm not saying there isn't, but at the same time, you know, since this scandal began, there's been a lot of strange rumors going around. And if, you know, if half of them were true, that would be enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but people have vivid imaginations. Again, I don't want to say this, you know, to, you know, a general audience, but you and I can discuss this later.
Well, it is a problem.
It is a problem. Incidentally, did you see the movie Spotlight?
No, I've heard about it and about the Boston scandal.
See it.
Yeah,
see
no,
it.
I understand, you know, the cover-up. And they've got another problem in New York with that Cardinal Archbishop and a priest who spent $1 million of the church's money on his boyfriend and a lot of other things. So, I mean, it's
right.
a problem. But not all priests and brothers.
They got problems not only in the United States, but they have mm-hmm. had problems in Canada.
Right.
They've had
Austria.
Big problems in Ireland.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
in some cases, what has happened was bishops in one part of the world were sending some of their errant priests
mm-hmm.
over to other countries.
Right.
And likewise.
And that. Right.
Yeah. So you had guys from the United States being suddenly sent over to Ireland,
mm-hmm.
as if Ireland did not already have plenty of priests.
And
then you
night.
Had Ireland sending some of its priests over here
yeah.
and to Canada and to Australia, as mm-hmm. if Australia did not already have, you know, a reputation for having miscreants sent there for the past 150 years. you know, that's not true anymore. But
well, they've got some scandals in Melbourne, I heard. Now let's look at another religion. This is the anniversary of Henry VIII declaring himself head of the Church of England. And one of the reasons
right.
in history that Henry VIII used as an excuse to break the Catholic Church was he accused the monasteries of being hotbeds of sodomy and all those sins.
You probably had the same thing going on at Henry VIII's court.
Oh yeah, no, undoubtedly, of course. You know, we like to think of Henry.
I mean, I'm sure that Hampton Palace was not exactly a center for celibate pietistic behavior.
But his church in America, I understand that the American Anglican Church or Episcopal Church has been sanctioned because of their gay agenda. And, of course, they are, quote, resisting. What about that? Now, we hear in the media picking on, is that the problem is only a Catholic problem, but there are other religions as well where
there
they're close.
Other religions that have a variation of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And having come from several generations of politicians or political operatives, I have enough sense at this point not to comment on that which I do not know for a fact. you do see where I'm going or not going with this. I'm not going to have the Archbishop of Canterbury putting out a contract on me. You know? I mean, seriously, we could speculate, you know, about all kinds of stuff, and we probably could do so over a few beers. But, you know, you're on the air, and it would be irresponsible for both you and me to go into some of that stuff unless you have more familiarity with the clergy of that particular denomination than I do. You know, I have to say I don't know.
Mm.
Being a know nothing.
Well,
you know, I mean, we've all heard the stories, but you know, mm-hmm. they've every denomination has its stories, and
mm.
how much of that is true, I just don't know. and I'm not.
Well, a convert from Anglicanism, I forgot his name, is a famous historian. He refers to the Episcopals or the Anglicans as the High Church of Sodomy. So he would be, I'm sure he knows much more about it than I know or has even experienced. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, the same thing could be said about the Queer Peers of Oxford. You know.
Well, yes, we know about them. Well, yes. Now, this is interesting. Did you know, getting back to our church, as I like to call it,
yes.
that we and when John, after, what was it, Paul the Sixth, or no, John the 23rd, I think, or Paul the Sixth died, there was another Italian, Cardinal Albano, I think, and he
yeah.
lasted 30 days. Well, it turns out,
yes.
I just found out that there was a pope named Synesius back in about 500 A.D. He was a pope for 20 days. I don't know how, you know, he was a bishop of Rome and all that. So I thought that was interesting that here we have somebody who had who lasted just 20 days. Of course, the way they were dealing with popes and anti-popes and all that sort of thing, and the Borgias and that whole crowd.
There were unquestionably, there were papal murders. I mean, being done by popes, but, you know, there were popes who were murdered, you know, at a time when, back in those days, remember, the Vatican was more political because the popes ran a series of principalities covering about a third of Italy. Mm-hmm. And so they were political leaders, and popes led their armies into battle and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
Julius.
Like Julius, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, most of them just appeared in gold armor and
mm-hmm.
stayed behind while the fighting was going. But there were some who, you know, took the sword and, you know, properly led their men into battle. It was part of the job that a pope in those days had to deal with, because he was not just a spiritual leader, but he was a king.
Yes,
this is not
way.
True today. Has not been since 1929,
mm-hmm.
When the Lateran Treaty set up the Vatican as a separate state,
right.
but the Pope agreed to certain curbs on his, you know, like if he needed military muscle, the Italian army was there to provide it for him.
Well, he's got the Swiss Guard.
You know, if needed.
Right.
Well, no, incidentally, everyone jokes about the Swiss Guards. Those guys go through an incredible amount of training.
Mm-hmm.
They are competent with the pistol, automatic pistol,
mm-hmm.
with the Uzi, with a machine gun. They know martial arts. They probably could teach the U.S. Rangers a few things. I mean, they really could. And, you know, on the other hand, I can tell you from when I was over in Rome, they're very, very friendly and very, very accommodating, but you can tell their eyes are wandering at all times because they're on the lookout for any kind of trouble. Furthermore, these guys, now I am 6 foot tall. I looked like a dwarf compared to these guys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they're 6 foot six and whatever. And they have this big German Swiss build, and you don't want to mess with them.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that they wear funny uniforms, they do know how to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And the Swiss Guards in civilian garb have served in effect as the Pope's Secret Service.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they're trained
yeah.
for it just like our Secret Service is trained for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I mean, I know everyone jokes about them, but they're not comic opera figures. They're for real. Just like the redcoats that you see in front of Buckingham Palace,
mm-hmm.
don't fool with those guys. They're members of one of four different elite British regiments, the Scots Guards, the Coldstream Guards, the Welsh Guards, and the Irish Guards, and from Northern Ireland. And these guys, they rotate. They're doing combat duty in Iraq or other parts of the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Then they come back and put on their uniforms and do that. Then they get sent somewhere else. So, you know, these guys are fully trained soldiers, and you really would be a fool to want to mess with them.
Yeah, by the way, I learned this when I interviewed a London policeman who was on special duty in Greece during at the end of World War II, and he said there were Irish from the Republic who served in the British Army, and a lot of people didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
About 10,000 of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, you still have, I'll give you a case in point, true fact. My daughter and I were visiting a British frigate here in Chicago at Navy Pier. I was covering a story. I took her along. I had permission to take her along, and because I wanted to give her the opportunity to see a British ship. She had, at that time, a weak eye, and she was wearing a patch to strengthen the other eye, or to strengthen the weak eye. She'd change a different design every day on her patch. On the day that we were supposed to visit Her Majesty's ship, she turns her patch into an Irish flag. And I said, Katie, I'm not so sure about that. And she said, our ancestors spent centuries trying to assert the right to fly this flag. She says, I'm not taking it off. Well, okay. And she was only about 8 years old at the time. Wouldn't you know, we get on the ship, and the officer of the deck, you know, who passes you on board, sees her flag, and he says, oh, you're Irish, so am I.
No.
And it turned out, he told me, half of the officers on that ship were Irish from the Republic.
No.
So,
well, I guess they got to do something.
Hey.
Now, Pat, we'll wrap up with your view on the political situation in Chicago. I understand that Bernie Sanders, and there's everybody's looking for dirt on him. What's your take? Is he going to overtake her in the the Iowa and the Hampshire caucuses?
You know, I think he's picking up steam. I think, and this is just my personal opinion, if Bernie Sanders would stop trying to look like David Ben-Gurion, he might.
I got you.
He's got an interesting agenda. He's got a lot of supporters. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he looks like he ought to be on the faculty of some college somewhere. And, you know, you've heard of looking presidential.
Right.
Looks are an important part of the job today. If you look like the man in charge, people will assume that you are the man in charge. And, you know, so, I mean, that's just an observation. I think Bernie Sanders is picking up a lot of people because he's saying a lot of things that people are concerned about.
So is
Trump.
Oh, it's Howard.
You know, and of course, I could say something about, you know, Trump's sartorial appearance, too, or tonsorial appearance.
He's a businessman.
You know, yes, this is true, but that fake wig of his, he can do better than that.
He's got the money. Yeah, well, hey, we do have a Catholic Irish ethnic, O'Malley, a former governor.
Yeah.
So I don't think.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, O'Malley, and I've seen him in some of the debates. Mm-hmm. You know, he puts on a pretty good show.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it. But it's really going to boil down to, I think Trump is going to come close to getting the
mm-hmm.
Republican nomination, unless the Republicans kick him out of the party. But every time the man says something terribly outrageous
mm-hmm.
that we all groan,
mm-hmm.
Every time he says that, his numbers mm-hmm. improve.
And, well, he's articulating what people, it's like 1968 and Nixon. So.
No, it's like 1933. Here's the thing. People keep saying, oh, there's no way they're going to elect that clown. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
People would never do anything like that. Mm-hmm. Well, they were saying the same thing in 1933 about a certain illegal alien who was running for chancellor. I mean, you do realize that Adolf Hitler was not a German.
Mm-hmm.
He was an Austrian.
Right.
And he was running for German chancellor.
Right,
and
right.
Everyone thought that he was a clown who was never going to get anywhere, and his
mm-hmm.
chances of actually becoming chancellor of Germany
mm-hmm.
Were almost nil. So don't worry about it, Heinz. Go back to your beer and pretzels. Well, they woke up.
And verse.
And they found out that this party of thugs and bandits and brigands
mm-hmm.
who ran around in these leftover World War I Africa Corps uniforms, all of a sudden these guys are running the country. And so I would be really a little bit cautious about saying Trump couldn't possibly get elected, because there are enough people out there who
mm-hmm.
are legitimately unhappy with some
mm-hmm.
of the stuff that's been going on here,
mm-hmm.
feel that the Obama administration has not been delivering on promises made but not promises kept
mm-hmm.
to the American public,
mm-hmm.
Has not taken a real leadership role
mm-hmm.
in ending the nonsense in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
Because, look, like it or not, we are the big dogs in the free world.
Mm-hmm.
And the President of the United States is the guy who has to put together coalitions of the willing or the unwilling
mm-hmm.
to defeat people like ISIS and others and restore some semblance of sanity to that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We may not like it. We may say it's not our job, that we shouldn't be there. But the fact of the matter is the job has been dumped on us.
Mm-hmm.
And we have got to do it because no one else can. The French are actually willing to do what they can, but the French do not have the military wherewithal. This is not the days of Louis XIV or Napoleon Bonaparte, where the French army was the largest and most fearsome in the known world. This is a case of where, like it or not, we've got the job. And if we don't do the job, then chaos is going to ensue. So, you know, again, a lot of people might not like to hear that. I don't think, you know, I don't like to see us that deeply involved in the Middle East. The fact of the matter is we're there. A lot of people are disgusted with Obama's performance or lack of performance.
Mm.
However, I am going to say for Obama, you know, he's often blamed for not doing much of anything. He probably saved us from a major depression by taking the steps that he did right after he took control as president. And, again, people will disagree and say that he didn't do enough. But the fact of the matter is he did enough to keep the whole market system from collapsing. Again, it wasn't perfect. And the money that was given to the banks and a few of the major corporations as a bailout. 75% of that money has been repaid.
Well,
so
there's still other
problems. That's better. That's better than results that we've gotten from the money that was given in foreign aid after World War
II. I knew you were going to bring that up. Well,
you realize the Brits still owe us.
Oh yeah, and the Russians.
For World War
One. We're never going to get the money.
And the only country that fully paid back its World War One debts to us was Finland.
Yeah.
You know,
no, we were never
going to
get it. Yeah. What was the other thing I was going to say? Well, what about Hillary? Since she is from Park Ridge, what's your take on her currently?
Well, she's one of the front runners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people still are looking for nasty things about her.
Don't have to look far.
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is that any candidate, if you look hard enough, if they're a serious candidate, their opponents are going to have people attempt to dig up whatever they can. You know, yeah, you hear certain things about Hillary, both in her personal life and in her public life. And, of course, Benghazi, that movie about Benghazi has come out
right.
at probably an unfortunate time. Although I haven't seen the movie. But, you know, this is part of the job. If you're running for president, you've got to expect there are going to be some people trying to dig up dirt on you. Now, I'm not saying, you know, live righteously and you won't have a problem, because none of us really lives righteously except for a few saints, and most of the saints are dead. They wouldn't be saints. The fact of the matter is that everybody has some warts and moles. How you handle the criticism of those warts and moles, I mean, look, when Benjamin Disraeli was sworn into the House of Commons, and there were people complaining about the fact that he was Jewish.
But he converted.
He got up and said, "Yes, I am a Jew. And when my ancestors were receiving the Ten Commandments on the top of the mountain, your ancestors were painting themselves blue and fighting with clubs."
Well, he did convert. He did convert.
Well, that's true, but you see, there's the feeling on the part of some people, once a Jew, always a Jew.
Right.
Once you have a drop of black blood in you, you are black.
Yeah.
You know,
the fact
of the matter is, people talk about Barack Obama as being our first black president.
He wasn't.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he wasn't, but I know this much. He's half black.
Yeah. Well, no, Harding was.
Harding may have been, had a touch of black blood, but the fact of the matter is, Obama is also half Irish.
Yeah, well, that's one Irish.
They claim him over in Ireland. When I was over there when the campaign was going on here, there were people over there saying all he has to do is change his name from Barack to Barry,
and put an apostrophe for O. That's what I said.
O and Obama. Yeah. And, you know, he's home.
I know. Well,
they liked him over there. And that was at a time when two or three of our recent presidents, they didn't like at all.
Yeah, well, you know.
No.
The Irish are always looking for novelties.
They what?
They're always looking for novelties. The Irish.
No, but I mean, everybody has a drop of something other than, you know, whatever in them. And
well, it reminds me of the South African, what do you call them, Afrikaans, who said he was accused of having black blood, African blood, and he said, "If I do, it's Zulu, the best." Well, they did.
A very sensible remark. But do you know that the president of South Africa, mm-hmm. who was officiating over the changes that took place in South Africa, where they did away with apartheid and all of that. Mm-hmm. He himself was reportedly a quarter black.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that wouldn't surprise
somewhere
me.
Somewhere
I mean,
back in the 16th, somewhere
mm-hmm.
back
when
in the 17th century,
mm-hmm.
One of his forebears from Holland or wherever had carnal Congress with one of the natives.
Jumped over the back fence, as Harding said.
You know, it goes on rather frequently. I mean, you know, God knows.
Well, look at Strom Thurmond.
Strom Thurmond.
Yeah, he talked all that racist crap publicly, but he was screwing around in the cupboard with a black woman.
Yeah. Well, when my daughter was about 9 or 10 years old, and she met a couple of black people, not related to us, but they had the same last name.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "Are they part of our family tree?" And I said, "I don't know, but the reason you find a number of blacks with Irish names, they very often took the names of the officers who
mm-hmm.
liberated them
mm-hmm.
When the plantations were, you know, taken
right.
over. And so they didn't know what other last name to take.
Mm-hmm.
So if the captain or lieutenant in charge of the operation, if his name was O'Reilly or Murphy or Butler or what have
mm-hmm.
you, or Alcantara, they would take that name. They also, some of them, took the names of slave owners, but since we did not own slaves, I'm pretty sure that that was not the case.
Mm.
You know, we certainly would not enslave anybody.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, we know what you call you people, baked Irish.
Well, you know,
well,
as a matter of fact,
at Maryville, and they were some of the best looking kids. The Clark family, as I recall.
Yeah.
They, you know, had
well, sure.
They had, you know, that coffee LA, I guess you'd call us that skin. But,
oh, sure.
So, you know, it's there was a lot of this. It was just like I used to get in arguments with Southern Italians. And if they had curly hair and were kind of swarthy, I'd say, you know, Hannibal stopped there and he weren't celibate. Those curls came
well,
from somewhere. The same thing in the Queen of Sheba and the Israelites. So you know that's
oh, yeah.
what to do with that.
Well, none of us are pure anything. And now
you know,
they have this
more
DNA
than
test. Yes,
no more
yeah.
than 300 years. You know, so
well,
you know, no, I mean,
consider the fact that a lot of the sailors
mm-hmm.
on the Spanish Armada.
Mm-hmm.
Not the
oh,
one
yeah.
in 1898 that my granduncle helped sink, but the one in 1588.
Right.
They crashed, many of those ships crashed on the coast of Ireland. And they stayed there and they intermingled.
Mm-hmm. The ones
you know,
that weren't
with the Irish.
Captured by the English.
The ones that weren't captured by the English, you know, and so what you have are, you know, probably a number of Irish,
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't say this in certain bars in Chicago, probably a number of Irish who have a little bit of soul in them. And,
well, we call them black Irish.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a DNA test that you can take, and
mm-hmm.
it's pretty legitimate. It's not quackery or anything like that.
Right.
It will tell you back about 500 years,
mm-hmm.
not who you're descended from, but what your ethnicity was
mm-hmm.
down through the centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, one of the people on our board of the Historical Association, she always thought that she was pure-blooded Irish. It turns out that back in the 1700s, a Romanian Jew entered the family. And that showed up on the DNA test. You know, so you find some interesting stuff that comes up. Certainly, certainly, many of us, I mean, my last name, Butler, was originally a Norman name from France. The Normans, Northmen, are descendants of the Vikings. I'm sure that I had relatives by the name of Ragnar and you know, Eric and yeah. And that, you know, their deity of choice was Odin.
Yeah. Well, we know you guys pillaged the shores of England. God save us from the
but
Vikings.
But they also built. Everyone thinks of the Vikings as, you know, raping and pillaging and burning and all of that sort of thing. But they also built. They had trade business set up as far east as the Ukraine. The first churches in Dublin were built by the Vikings. Who were Catholics in those days.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, they did a lot of constructive things, too. And in fact, a friend of mine runs a Swedish-American club, the Vasa Society, which is named after the royal family. Well, the Vasa was named for that royal family, too. But see, the Vasas were the royal family of Sweden until the late 1700s, last Vasa was assassinated, and they had to find a new dynasty. So they asked Napoleon to send over someone, and they sent someone from the Bernadotte family, and they're still, you know, the
still
Bernadotte family is still the royal house. Napoleon had hoped that General Bernadotte would be more or less his man in Sweden and in Norway and that whole area there. What happened was when one of Napoleon's wars broke out, this guy,
John Bernadotte,
having taken the oath as King of Sweden, realized that his duty was to Sweden, and he organized resistance against Napoleon.
Yeah, he had to become a Lutheran. So, he had to renounce the faith.
He had to become a Lutheran, and he had to take instruction and all of that sort of thing. But, you know, Lutheranism and Catholicism isn't all that much different. It really isn't. I mean, at least High Church Lutheranism is not, because I have a friend who's pastor of a Lutheran church, and I've been to his services, and they're just like ours. I mean, almost word for word. And I remember the Lutheran bishop was visiting there, and I was doing a story on this guy's appearance there for the paper. And Lutheran bishops are entitled to marry. And I didn't know exactly how I was supposed to address the bishop. And so I asked his wife. His wife used to work at the Lerner newspapers. And I said, I'm in an awkward position. Do I address him as Your Grace? Do I address him as Your Excellency? What do you call a Lutheran bishop? I know what the drill is for a Catholic bishop. And she says, oh, we don't do that sort of thing. They'd be impossible to live with. she says, just call him bishop.
Well, I know one woman who was a very staunch conservative, Orthodox Catholic. She encountered a similar situation, and you know what she told this Protestant? Submit.
What?
Submit.
Oh, God. You know, that sounds like something that you would do.
Well, you know, order, orthodoxy, and discipline. You know, I want to bring back the Inquisition, but we'll be democratic and do it.
Well, right. You want to bring back the Inquisition simply because of the fact that you want a job. you're bored with things in San Francisco, and you want an opportunity to travel through Europe, going from town to town, and
right.
Selling
indulgences.
Looking for hair. It's selling indulgences. You know, what is that expression? When a penny in the coffer rings, another soul to heaven springs. And, you know, you and Titzel would have gotten along, you know, just fine.
I was going to do my DNA, but I'm not going to do it because he might be in my DNA. So.
Well, I don't know.
I don't want to know.
You know, I have a friend who thinks that we share the same DNA, and that's Carolyn Bull, and she's related to the British royal family, and she thinks that because Anne Boleyn's mother was a butler from the same part of Ireland we're from, she thinks that we may be very, very distant cousins. And I said, distant enough? And she says, what that means is we can't mess around. And I said, but your family had been doing it for centuries. And she says, this is America, not the 12th or 13th century.
Well, I think, what was it, Bush's mother, Jeb Bush's mother, said it best, and I can just see it. I don't think he's going to get the nomination, but I can just see if, in unlikelihood, he does, I can just see the bumper stickers. Listen to your mother. Two Bushes are enough. She said that.
Okay. No, I think Bush, this just is not Bush's year. It really isn't.
Well, you know, he's such a wimp. You know, it's interesting. This is probably I think this is most Catholic. We have more Catholics in this presidential candidacy than any other modern presidential race election period that I can think of. You've got O'Malley.
Well, we got to have a job. We got to have jobs too, you know.
The only one that puts me off is Huckleberry. Can you imagine a president Huckleberry or Huckabee? Yeah,
yeah,
you know, it's like
Huckleberry.
Gershwin, a Wintergreen for president. I'm thinking, oh God, you know. He's a Baptist minister. Did you know that?
Yeah,
well,
he is.
You know what Harry Truman said about Baptists, and Harry Truman was a Baptist, but he says, yeah, but I'm a bourbon drinking Baptist.
I think most of them are. But there seems to be a little bit of hypocrisy in that. Like the Mormons. You know, the Mormons abstain from liquor. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. You go into some of the restaurants in Salt Lake City. What you do is you leave your private stock there so that you go in there and they know who you are and, you get something from your private stock. And, of course, then they go
across the
street.
Mormons do a lot of things that would
surprise
you.
To the Mormon temple.
Yeah, I went with the Mormon temple. They do a lot of things that would surprise you, at least the ones I know. So
tell me, you went with a Mormon for a while?
Mormon girl, yeah. Jack Mormon.
Yeah. Did she wear the Mormon underwear? Do you know about that?
No.
The really devout Mormons wear a special type of underwear, and it's marked with all kinds of spiritual symbols on it.
Oh,
and this is supposed to keep them free of sin. And I kid you not. And it's blessed underwear. You think Catholics have strange customs. this is blessed underwear. And
who blesses?
Has, you know, Mormon symbols, and there's a there's one type of underwear for women and another type for men. But, and it's you know, it's something they don't particularly talk about too much.
Mm-hmm.
Just
well,
like,
if I see her again, I'll ask her, have you changed your Mormon underwear?
Not Norman, Mormon.
Mormon underwear.
Mormon underwear. See, I'm a Norman Irish, not a Mormon Irish.
By the way, did you know, this is interesting, it didn't come up much, when Romney ran for president, when he was a missionary in France, he was injured by a priest who was recklessly driving, a Roman Catholic priest.
Oh, really? What?
A lot of people
well,
don't know.
The problem is, you know, he obviously wasn't driving well enough, or he would.
Well, I tell you, these Mormons, when they get onto that missionary thing, I just, you know. Okay, Pat, we will talk again. This was a kind of a fun one for a change. we had a week of idiocy with certain politicians. And no, nothing.
Well, did you watch the Republican debates last night?
I saw part of it and all the sniping and all of that. But, you know, it's going to be interesting. If Sanders does, I don't think he will, but it'll certainly be a floor fight, gets the nomination for the Democrats. It's not going to be O'Malley unless, you know, those two, Sanders and Hillary, are forced out or drop out or die. Anything can happen. It's going to be very interesting. You know, they will be debating. And, of course, I'm going to be there in a minute, dear. You know, it depends on who the moderators are, because some of those moderators are very biased, you know, in the past.
Well, so, do you know, I just have a thought here. Do you know anyone at Fort Myers?
Who?
Pardon? Do you know anyone in a senior position at Fort Myer?
No, I don't.
Virginia.
Yeah,
okay.
I know.
Well, I was just thinking that, you know, we could probably, if things really get out of hand, we could probably get some troops. You see where I'm going with this?
I know where you're going. No, we're not going to have an insurrection.
It's not called an insurrection. It's called a coup, and it is by the committee. It is called the Committee of National Redemption. And,
oh, God. You're beginning to sound like an African potentate, like that guy in, what's his name, Mobutu or Mugabe or Mugabe?
You'll never catch me in a dashiki. I've already got my uniform picked out already, and that includes the high riding boots, the riding pants, those would be in tan. The jacket would be in a nice deep green. My hat would be a peaked cap, you know, with our family coat of arms on it.
Oh, God. And, well, I'll settle for being Caudillo. I like that.
Well, that's no fun. That's no fun.
I like to be austere, like De Gaulle. Listen, we got around.
De Gaulle was about as austere as I am celibate. The fact is, I mean, look, De Gaulle, when he was president of France, where did he kneel?
I know. Right, you'd sit up in the sanctuary and wait for the priest.
The priest, right on the altar, right by the priest.
Now that's right. Just remember, also, his family was Irish.
The only that's true. The only other head of state I know of that was customarily inclined were the Byzantine emperors, because the Byzantine emperors, when you were crowned emperor, part of the rite was that they placed the crown on your head, and they would remind him, "Thou art both priest and king." So he was, the Byzantine emperors were entitled to join in on the liturgical ceremonies.
Well, you see where the Byzantine emperors went. Well, Patrick, you must go.
Hey, they lasted 1,500 years. What do you want?
More.
You know, the Byzantine Empire lasted from, like, about 200 A.D. to 1452, was it? And so I mean that's a pretty long run.
Well, we'll make it longer.
You show me a Broadway play that runs that long.
Well, I won't comment on that. All right, Bad, good talking to you. We'll have another interesting tete-a-tete which goes in every which direction.
take it easy.
Take care.
Okay.
Good night.
Okay, bye.
This is Peter Paul Brazil, and we're going to end with our usual politics and poker. We'll make it real short. Uh-oh, something happened here. So we will end right now. Where is politics and poker? Uh-oh. What happened here? Anyway, something screwed up. So we'll end with we'll be back Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, our regular time, and we'll have more. And also, we're going to be uploading more videos on Amicus Veritas YouTube. Good night. Stay safe. Stay warm. Yep. Well, trying to end the episode here. Yes, we do.